Now, rocketing out of Earth and getting an intergalactic stamp in your passport might sound like a good idea during the pandemic, but just hold on. Houston, we have a problem. Space tourism is a little more complicated than it sounds, and we're actually still a few light years away from ironing out the details. This morning, I'm joined by Stephen Freeland, who's an Emeritus Professor at Western Sydney University and Professorial Fellow at Bond University, to learn more about this new area. How are you this morning, Stephen?
I'm really well, Willie. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. Now, before we even get to space, would these tourists have to complete any kind of training to like what astronauts go through?
I'm not sure exactly the details, but I don't think besides the basic fitness and all of that, I don't think there was much training involved. And when you think about it, with the Jeff Bezos example, for example, they didn't actually have to do anything. They sat there and it was all automated and controlled from Earth anyway. So they didn't have to perform any activities. When you compare that, as you say, with the astronauts who have gone into orbit, remembering these two suborbital flights, they didn't go into orbit around the Earth, which is obviously a lot more complex. But those that have gone into orbit, of course, have had to have months and years of training in some cases. So it really is comparing apples and oranges.
Yeah, okay. And I'm glad you said that the orbital versus suborbital, because how can we really, what is the edge of space really? Like, is it the minute you hit weightlessness, does that kind of classify you as space, or is there a set criteria?
Well, the answer is we don't know the answer.
Okay.
But it will depend on who you are.
Yeah, okay.
You're speaking now to a lawyer, and at the international law level, which is where these things are sort of discussed and decided, we still don't know where, if you like, airspace ends and outer space begins. The reason we don't know that, there have been lots of theories, lots of numbers, is it where atmosphere ends, is it where you become weightless or whatever. The reason we don't know it is really one of politics, because if you think about it, airspace, so the airspace above Australia is within Australia's jurisdiction. So Australian law applies to our airspace. The outer space, let's say above our airspace is outer space, the outer space above Australia is beyond Australia's jurisdiction, so Australian law does not apply. It's governed by international law. So the large countries who have got all these capabilities to do things above our heads, they don't want us to agree that boundary, because once you agree that boundary, there's a line below which you're obviously infringing on the sovereignty of others, and also they don't want the upper levels of their sovereignty capped. And so we don't know from a legal perspective where space begins, although there are many theories. But, of course, different people have different perspectives. And, of course, the space tourism companies are going to say to their passengers, to their clients, you're going into space, rather than saying you're going very, very high up in the air. So, different people, different countries have different perspectives, but from a strictly international law perspective, we don't know the answer.
Oh, interesting. And so a legal amendment in the US might deny Jeff Bezos and Richard Branson the title of astronaut. I guess that would kind of take the shine off this space tourism trip as well, wouldn't it?
Well, if you paid the money, you would, if you were given astronaut wings, you would wear them with pride. So, again, at law, we don't have a definition of what an astronaut is, but under the international system that regulates space, astronauts are special people. In fact, they're regarded, and I don't mean to have too much law in here, but they're regarded as what we call envoys of humankind. They're really special people. And so I found it interesting and perhaps more than coincidental that on the day that Jeff Bezos did his trip. And we must marvel at the technology of both the Bezos and Branson experiences, that what they've achieved is incredible technology. But on the same day that Bezos did it, as you said, the U.S. Federal Aviation Authority tightened the rules, if you like, about what they in America would at least regard as an astronaut by saying you have to be part of a crew, you have to be contributing to the way the safety is carried out, which essentially means, as you say, that perhaps these two, from that perspective at least, would not be astronauts. But again, the companies are still going to give out astronaut wings, notwithstanding, I think.
Yeah, right. Oh, my God. So is space law like a seriously fast-growing field?
Well, space, when you think about it, it's a great question. And, you know, when people say you do space law, you know, they roll their eyes and they think, what can that be about? When you think about it, you and I, Willie, we use space every day without even thinking about it 30 times. You know, obviously GPS in our phones, but it's about weather forecasting. It's about financial transactions. It's about watching the Tokyo Olympics on TV. That's through satellite communications. It's about navigation. It's about agricultural management, disaster management. The list goes on. Space is everywhere. We use it all the time. It's incredibly strategic, it's incredibly economic and cultural and scientific. And so there's a lot of rules that we need. And these have been developed over the past 6.5 decades. So yes, we have a lot of law, but it's also law is necessary because space has also become a very significant economy. The space economy in 2020 was valued at about $400 billion annually.
God.
And growing, and you know, growing even during COVID, it was one of those few industries that continued to grow. And even in Australia, your listeners might recall, we now have a space agency. It was established in 2018, and part of its KPIs, part of its goal, is to encourage the Australian space industry to grow to $12 billion Australian dollars by 2030. So it's a highly sophisticated and growing economic area, as well as all the other incredibly important things that it does. So clearly we need rules, but the technology moves much faster than the law. So we've got to continually think about, well, how will we deal with this and how will we deal with that? And that sort of gives people like me a job for life, I suppose. but it's a really interesting area. But, you know, perhaps people could sit back and think, my goodness, you know, we use space every day. It is everywhere in our lives. And if you could imagine a day without space, a theoretical day without space would mean whole countries' economies and infrastructure would collapse. It's that important,
yeah.
You know, and so I'm not exaggerating this. You know, space is everywhere, and we really need to understand that it's fragile, it's important, it affects everybody, it affects our lives, and so therefore we need to utilize it in a way that gives the maximum benefits to the most number of people.
Oh my goodness, Stephen Freeland, I could speak to you all morning, but we have run out of time, unfortunately. Thank you so much for all your input this morning. It's fascinating.
Oh, Willie, it's a pleasure, and I'm happy to talk to you anytime. Take care.